Hang on a minute, this is Purple Patch. I thought it was supposed to be easy. Hi, I'm Matt Dixon with Purple Patch. That was a quote that I recently got from an athlete that just started working with us. I think he'd spent a fair amount of time doing his research and reading a lot about my stance on recovery. Unfortunately, he'd sort of made the jump, which I think is actually pretty common for athletes to do, that by valuing recovery, that somehow equates to making the endurance training easier. So I want to start this podcast that's focusing on recovery to make something absolutely clear. Recovery is not a shortcut. It's not gonna make your route to getting faster any easier. In fact, what properly integrated recovery does is it enables you to train more consistently and harder. Recovery is the key element to allowing you to work hard. Ultimately, there is no shortcut in endurance sports, and the only way to get better is consistent, solid training. And with that, we're going to launch into today's podcast, which is really going to focus around recovery modalities. Let's get cracking. I think it would be unfair or remiss of me not to start by at least framing what I'm talking about when we consider recovery modalities. Let's take a step back a little bit and let's think about the different elements of recovery, or what I call buckets of recovery that I consider in endurance sports. The three are lifestyle, training, and modalities. Training recovery, we'll start with the middle one. Training recovery is really focused about the way that you set up your training plan and integrating recovery into the training week, the training cycle, or even setting up the season of training and racing that you're going to go through. That's already integrated into your training plan as it stands, and of course we're going to talk more about that, but we're not going to talk about that today. The second component that's really important, the second bucket, is lifestyle recovery. When you're training consistently, I would label lifestyle recovery as your number one most important element to consider. The two big components of lifestyle recovery are three. Number one, sleep. Number two, quality nutrition. You've got to eat, and that's why I label it as free. While you have to buy your food, I'll acknowledge that you might as well eat well and eat often and eat enough. Those are the big two of the bucket of lifestyle nutrition. Today, we're going to focus on modalities. And let's delve in, and I'm going to give you just some insight of some thumbs up or thumbs down on some of the things that you might consider adding into your training week to enable you to recover quicker, or at least enable you to train hard and at the same time look after your musculoskeletal and hormonal system. So let's get cracking with that. I always think that modalities of recovery, these are really the add-ons of your recovery protocol. It's probably the one area that is the most focused on for many, many triathletes, because there are lots of fancy gadgets and gizmos and things that you can go out and buy that often I think many athletes find are either cool or maybe can be the extra edge to give you the shortcut to an improved performance. Ultimately, everything I'm going to talk about from here on out pales in importance relative to what we talked about first, which is your training recovery integration, so actually having a smart training program and then supporting that training program with proper lifestyle recovery, sleep, nutrition, etc., etc. So what we're going to talk about now are the modalities, the add-ons. What do those include? Well, I think that there are sort of different buckets that we can talk about, but some of the things we'll cover are massage, ART or active release therapy, trigger point, compression, both during training as well as during travel or outside of retraining, ice and heat therapy, stretching. Where in the world should you focus? There's loads of talk about this. What should you do? What shouldn't you do? Should you stretch before? Should you stretch following? Well, let's get into it and let's talk about it. And let's talk about each of the modalities in order, and then we can decide how we can wrap it up and really focus on your training week. Let's start with the biggie. Let's start with stretching. Should you or shouldn't you stretch? Well, I tell you this, throughout the history of endurance sports, you'll read in every magazine and listen to many coaches, and they'll always say, make sure you stretch. I'm going to start with something pretty controversial. You don't need to stretch too much. In fact, you don't need to stretch at all. I will say that Before your activity, one thing that's very important is dynamic stretching. That's very, very different than the static stretching that is traditionally pushed as something that you should engage in. I'm not a fan of static stretching. I think that there are some athletes that benefit from static stretching. There are some instances where static stretching might be okay, but for the most part, too many athletes overstretch and end up getting injured. Before you exercise, it's important that you prepare your body for activity that you're going to be doing. And the best thing to do is to be mimicking the type of actions that you will be doing during your exercise with very slow and easy joint mobility exercises. We call that dynamic stretching or dynamic movement. At no time before you exercise do you need to hold the muscle and try and lengthen the muscle in a static stretch. It does nothing to prepare the muscle or the joints to engage in endurance activity. And the only risk and the risk of engaging in it is injury. So the thing that you're trying to avoid is the thing that static stretching promotes. Following activity, the best thing that you can do is cool down. Continue doing the activity, but just gradually bring it down very, very easy. But static stretching following, again, it just doesn't seem to actually create the results that you think you're looking for. Often in your training, there is a lot of muscular damage that has been done. And when you forcibly try and lengthen the muscle or stretch the muscle in a static stretch, muscle contraction just doesn't work like that. And in fact, it will cause the muscle to go into probably more spasm than it will relax and recover. So if I were you, you might do some mobility exercises. You might do some other activities that can help the muscle to release, which I'm just about to talk about. But you can avoid static stretching generally in your endurance sports. There you go. I just saved you some time. Okay, so you're not going to stretch. So what are you going to do? Well, I think that you can work on the origin of the muscle a little bit. In fact, there are a few toys that you can get that are really pretty cheap that I think that are highly valuable for endurance athletes. Trigger Point is one, or TP massage as it's called, as well as ART therapy, or even a foam roller. These types of tools or toys that you can use that actually isolate the origin of the muscle and enable you to release the end of the muscle to enable the main body of the muscle to release are highly valuable. It doesn't take long. It's a little painful, but it is actually effective. I'll send you out some more information on these, but I think that they are fantastic tools. In combination with these, if you get the opportunity, massage is fantastic. Massage is a great tool and a great thing to have. And hey, it's not such a bad experience. Of course, I understand that massage is relatively expensive if you have it really frequently. But if you do care about your recovery, I would encourage you to have relatively regular massages so that you can flush the main body of the muscle and make sure that any hot spots or any tight spots can be released. Certainly worthwhile. Let's talk about another hot topic, compression. Is compression worth it? Well, you'll see a lot of triathletes walking around transitions or walking around expos the day before the competition, as well as actually during the competition wearing compression. Here's my take on compression. I think that the science behind compression as a recovery tool is relatively robust. I actually like compression following activity and actually to try and mitigate some of the effects of components such as travel, flight, getting on a plane. Compression is wonderful. Go ahead and use it. I think where the science gets a little shaky is during competition. Is it really valuable to wear compression socks or compression tights during competition? There is two fields of thought on this, but ultimately I think what it comes down to is it certainly can be an emotional tool where some people just feel like it helps them. And there is one thing that's for sure, there is nothing bad from a physiological standpoint of wearing compression tights during competition. So if you feel like they are a benefit to you, go ahead and wear them. If you're not fast, don't feel forced to go out and purchase them, because I think that during competition, the science is a little bit more shaky and a little less understood. As a recovery tool, fantastic piece of equipment. the one area that I always encourage you, if you do happen to have to travel to a race or you travel a lot for business, compression during flights and following flights or travel during long car rides, absolutely fantastic. I would certainly include that. So those are a couple more. Let's focus on the final one on ice and heat. Ice and heat are controversial, to say the least. This is one of these instances where I think that there is a little real understanding of what happens with ice relative to recovery for endurance athletes. And if you isolate and put things into a lab or at a cellular level, ice does prevent inflammation, so it helps inflammation. In my experience as a coach, I'm not a massive fan of people icing after endurance training. Unless there is a very isolated inflammation, let's say your Achilles tendon is aggravated, and then yes, ice is a fantastic tool to try and help that. That's more of a therapy. But dumping yourself into ice baths, I'm just not a big fan of. I see so many athletes' joints get very tight, and in fact, there is very, very shaky science, if any science at all, to show that cold therapy truly helps recovery in an endurance athlete. So why do it? It's not very pleasant. In my experience, it tends to tighten up the joints and affect the next day's training, and ultimately, we're not even sure if it's effective at all. So in my experience, I'd say you can avoid the ice unless you have a very isolated spot of hot spot on either your knee, patella tendon, Achilles tendon, something like that. But overall, don't worry about it. In lieu of ice, I much prefer heat. I love to get the blood moving, and so I'm a big fan of heat treatments to try and facilitate the recovery process. Saunas, jacuzzis, even compression wrapped in very warm clothing so that you can try and facilitate heat recovery. I'd much prefer you to see you utilizing heat as a recovery technique versus ice, and I think that that's the way for you to go. Hey, it's much more pleasurable, so why not take advantage of it? And those are really the modalities that are worthy of consideration when we think about recovery. I want to come right back to the start again. Remember, the modalities are the add-ons, they're the extras, they are the afterthoughts of recovery. They're fantastic if you want to gain an edge, but ultimately, you want to make sure that these are the P's when you should be considering your stake. Recovery truly comes about, and consistency comes out of that recovery when you focus on a really smart training plan and ensuring that sleep and nutrition and fueling support that training plan. Those are the pillars of your recovery. All of these are fantastic elements to add on, but you've got to make sure that you focus on the cake before you focus on the icing. Hope that helps a little bit. More to come later.